1 Samuel 9, here we have this fascinating story of Saul, who was clearly not a particularly religious, spiritual person, who God chooses in order to be the king of his people. And we're going to read later on that the Spirit of God came upon him and he became another man. He was given another heart, another mind. But Samuel told him that what's important is that you keep on following your leading, where God is leading you. And yet he failed to do that. It's rather like the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 1, they were filled with the Spirit. They were given the Spirit to a large extent. And yet he says in chapter 3 of 1 Corinthians, I cannot write to you as unto spiritual people, because you are carnal. So God gives the Spirit, God works in someone's life in order to try by all means to change them. And yet, if we refuse to follow ultimately where we're being led, it will all be to no avail, and indeed, it will end up leading to our condemnation. So then, Saul then is, I think, a bit like Simon of Cyrene, who was just passing by from the country, and suddenly he's zapped by the Roman soldiers and told to carry the cross of Jesus. And it could appear that his sons, according to Romans 15, his sons actually become believers. But Saul, anyway, is out there looking for lost donkeys. We really get the impression he was just not a particularly strong believer at all. He certainly was not involved with Samuel's ministry. Samuel went around Israel teaching people and holding the feasts, etc., and sacrifices. But he clearly does not know that, or if he does know it, he certainly has shown no interest in attending those meetings. Now, in verse 18, Saul came near to Samuel in the gate and said, please can you tell me where the prophet's house is? And Samuel sort of says, well, I'm the prophet. Well, he clearly didn't recognize Samuel, and it's not clear actually where they were. The reference to the prophet's house could imply they were in Ramah, well, which was where Samuel visited and where his home was. Well, if it was Ramah, this was 5 miles away from Gibeah of Saul, where Saul came from. So it's 5 miles away, but Saul doesn't know anything about Samuel much. He doesn't even recognize him when he sees him. And the girls he meets say, yeah, sure, the prophet is here. It's like it's a feast day. I mean, he's come to offer the sacrifice. Well, Saul was clearly not an observant Hebrew. He was not Torah observant. It's pretty obvious. He's like, oh, really? There's a feast today? Well, I never knew that. You also get the impression that when his servant says to him, well, what are we going to do about the donkeys? Yeah, well, there's a prophet around here. And he says to the servant, ah, yeah, but if you go to those guys, you've got to give them money, right? And the servant says, yeah, I got a coin. We can give him that. And I'm sure that Samuel didn't take money from people. It's clear that, well, he says when he hands over the kingdom, really, Samuel clears himself and says, look, I never took money from you. I didn't steal no donkeys or whatever. And it's clear that that's not how Samuel would have been. And yet Saul has this totally secular view, shall I say, of religion. Oh, yeah, there's a man of God around here. Okay, yeah, we've got any money in our pockets, you got to pay those guys. He clearly was not a spiritual person. Well, the point is that he wasn't, but he was grabbed by God. And he's then used by God. And he's set up with a whole load of signs and things like that to show him that, look, yes, you, Saul, just you ordinary secular person, I've got a number on you and I want you and I am working in your life. He looks for those donkeys throughout Shalisha, the land of Shalisha, which literally means the land of threes. And the experiences he's going to have are full of tripolisms, that is, threes. There were three signs given to him, three things that were going to happen to him, and they all happened. Three men were to meet with him, etc. And God is there saying, look, join the dots, Saul. You secular guy who was out there looking for lost cattle, I just walked into your life. And this is how God acts with people. Now, this is not to say that he just picks on some random guy walking down a street and zaps him with the Holy Spirit and the guy's going to get saved. Not at all, because God seeks for relationship above all things. And yet it is also true that man left to his own device is probably not going to come to God. He needs God's action, God's stimulation, and yet God does it in a perfect balance, whereby he is not forcing, but he is confirming, encouraging, and giving the opportunity to people whom he has called. And clearly, Saul was somebody whom God had called. So, this does have similarities with so many of us. When you look back to how you were when you were younger, before God apparently came into your life, of course he was in your life, he was clearing the ground and preparing the way for you, right from your birth and actually from the beginning of the world, all through your genetic prehistory, he was clearing the ground for that moment when he would come into your life. This is actually all of us. Saul is, in that sense, every man. Well, just in passing, verse 20, Samuel says to him, as for your donkeys that were lost 3 days ago, don't worry about them, they have been found. I wonder if it was not actually Samuel who had found the donkeys, and I wonder if that's why later when he clears himself in 1 Samuel 12 at the end of his life, Samuel says, I never stole a donkey. I never stole a donkey from any of you. In other words, yeah, and I found Saul's lost donkeys when he was a young guy, and I gave him back to his father. And I have suggested, if you look at my notes in the commentary on verse 3, that 1 Samuel 9, verse 3, that donkeys are associated with kingship. Donkeys are associated with kingship. If you follow through the word ass or donkey, it's very often in the Bible associated with kings. And I think Saul is being shown that actually God's prophetic word through Samuel has, as it were, found the donkeys for him. God has taken the initiative. Although I have said earlier that there has to be human response, human free will response, God is not zapping people and forcing them into his kingdom against their will. That is so, but it is also so that he is also the God of initiative. He takes the initiative. As Paul says, it is not so much that we know God, but rather that we were known of him. So, verse 19, Samuel says to him, you shall eat with me today, and in the morning I will let you go. Now, let you go almost implies that Saul was somehow under arrest by God. And this was indeed the idea, that God had come into his life and had got a claim upon him. Well, in verse 21, Saul replies, am I not a Benjamite of the smallest of the tribes of Israel, and is not my family the least of all the families of the tribe of Benjamin? Why then do you speak to me like this? He clearly did not really like the idea of it. And we have read in verse 1 of 1 Samuel 9 that Kish was in fact, that Saul's father, was in fact a very powerful man, and that the family of Saul was in fact a strong and powerful family, and Saul himself is described as a mighty man of valor. So you wonder when Saul says now in verse 21, my family is the least of all the families of the tribe of Benjamin. Well, we're told in verse 1 that wasn't the case. And we just wonder whether this is humility, genuine humility, who am I to be the king of Israel, or whether he is using humility as an excuse not to do God's work. And I think that the question is left open to elicit our reflection, our discussion, our thought about that. Because so often we can misuse the idea of humility as an excuse not to follow where we're being led. Oh, me do that? No. I'm too humble to get my hands dirty doing God's work. Me to do that? No. Not for me. You can think of a similar example in Isaiah when Ahaz is offered a sign and he says, oh, I couldn't accept the sign from God. And God is actually very angry with him. So don't use humility or what appears humility as an excuse not to do God's work. Now, whether Saul was like that, I don't know. I suspect that's what it was. But it could have been that he started humble, because we're told that he did start little in his own eyes, and then he went wrong. So there's a lot of things like that in the biblical text which are open. You know, did Jephthah sacrifice his daughter? Well, people may be dogmatic one way or the other, but these sort of things are there in the text to invite our discussion, to invite our reflection, because the text of the Bible, the historical records, are there inviting us and beckoning us into dialogue with God.